This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Alma Labong is on a U.S. tour to build support for Filipino workers under attack by the Duterte regime by pressuring the U.S. to cut off military aid for the Philippines. 30 labor leaders have been killed since Duterte became president. Others have been jailed on trumped-up charges as the conditions for workers deteriorated.
Masses of workers have been forced to strike because public and private employers are only giving workers temporary employment that lasts less than 6 months, and they're terminated short of being eligible for regular benefits. Strike picket lines have been busted up by the police, who beat workers and round them up to jail.
And we're extremely pleased to have with us Alma Labong, who's the chairperson of the Kilosang Mayo Uno KMU Labor Federation, also known as the KMU May 1st Labor Center. And it is an honor to have you with us.
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity.
Alma, the introduction that we gave before highlighted two drastic conditions in the Philippines, one involving the condition of contractualization of labor, and the other is increased repression of labor by the state. Both of those, we might want to take a case study. Both of those were manifested in the case of NutraAsia. This is one among many firms. So do you want to talk about that and how these tendencies were displayed in that case?
Yeah, actually, during the elections, Mr. Duterte promised to altogether junk the contractualization scheme in the Philippines, and indeed there were high expectations from the ranks of labor. In fact, we've undergone a lot of dialogues with government, particularly with Mr. Duterte, to push on the demand to make true his electoral promise. And indeed, even on the last May Day, he promised that if we come up with a draft of the executive order, then he will just be signing this in its entirety. But then again, instead of coming out with the version that we were expecting, it was a version, a shallow version of the junking of the contractualization scheme that came out. So, nevertheless, despite this, there are positive orders given out by the Department of Labor calling on companies, including NutraAsia, to implement regularization of their workers. In fact, the Philippine Long Distance Telephone Company was ordered to regularize 12,000. The Coca-Cola plant in Santa Rosa, Laguna, was ordered to regularized 657 workers. The Jollibee chain of restaurants was asked to regularize 8,000, and so on and so forth. So, in all these orders, what the capitalists would usually do is to either transfer the workforce or fire them all at once. And so, this has created a lot of contradiction. And that's one of them is NutraAsia, where workers were asserting the regularization of contractual workers. So there's an opening of the floodgates that led to various forms of struggles, including strikes, like the NutraAsia case, because of this failed promise of the president. And so we're in a situation now where the number of actual conflicts had reached up to 31, including those in Mindanao. And as I left the country, there were about more or less 200 notices of strikes that were filed with the Labor Department. So it's a volatile situation that invites a lot of the caps in picket lines, especially in areas where there are they are far from cities. One of the terrible impact of this is that they wanted to make it appear that our members in the banana plantations are NPA surrenderees, and that they are bona fide card-bearing, dues-paying members of our organization, and yet the military wanted to manipulate the situation, especially in a case where Mindanao is still under the effect of martial law.
Elmer Labong, could you first just go back for a moment and tell us more about the overall conditions of the Filipino workers and really situate that within the advent of the Duterte administration, just to give us a kind of context for the particular struggles that are going on?
Yeah, first of all, our because of the issue of contractualization, this is a major demand of the labor movement in the Philippines to regularize contractual workers who have been serving companies for several decades already. And so this is in consonance with the president's promise to stop contractualization. In fact, the practice of firing workers after 5 months work, which we call endo in the slang, which in the labor language means end of contract, is one of those that we fought for, meaning workers should be regularized after 6 months. And so what the employers do is before reaching 6 months, they would fire their workers. And this has been a prevailing practice for quite some time. So that's the number one issue we have, and this is coupled with the low wages that we have. So since wages are regionalized, the highest wage level is about a little over 10 U.S. dollars or 502 pesos a day plus 10 pesos allowance in Metro Manila. So as you go farther away from Metro Manila, the wages are much, much lower. We are demanding for the increase of wages in the light that the current prices of commodities and services keep rising, especially with the implementation of the tax reform law at present, which is called TRAIN, or the Tax Reform Acceleration and Inclusion Act, or Republic Act 109-63, which technically imposes taxation on various items and services in order to affect the implementation of the project of the government, which is called Build Infrastructure Program. In the process, taxing especially products that uses sugar in its products like beverages. So these are the facts that are prevailing and the current situation in the Philippines. Our wages are low, but the inflation rate is too high. Like currently it's 6.6% already and is still going high. The prices of oil and oil products keeps increasing almost every week, but the level of wages still remains low. So as we assert our rights to better working conditions through regularization of the contractual workforce and fight for higher wages, this is where the conflict comes with the police, because generally the companies summons the police and use goons to disperse the workers every time we assert such a right. One of the positive conditions that we were able to attain for the past several months already, beyond May Day, is the unification of all labor groups towards the fight for regularization of contractual workers.
And by the way, Elmer, let me just interrupt you. What kind of work are we talking about? What kind of jobs are these?
These are jobs that are not regular, meaning...
No, I understand, but what do they do? Are they manufacturing jobs? Are they?
They're various, so you see them in services, in manufacturing, and also in agriculture. This is where the dominant contractual workers are. So contractuals are in government and in the private sector.
So it's across the spectrum. It's public sector and private.
Across all sectors of the labor movement. Like one in every three government workers are contractuals, and three out of five in private sector are likewise contractual. So even the so-called core functions of companies are farmed out to non-regular workforce or the contractual workers. So practically 70% of the total labor force are contractual workers. This explains why there is a massive reduction of the membership of the unions and thus paying aspect of the labor force. In terms of our organizing.
In terms of the police repression, because you mentioned the goons coming in from the outside, but people are being beat by the cops, aren't they, and also hauled off to jail. And you mentioned to me also in a prior discussion that 30 trade union leaders have been killed in the last year or so.
Yes, since Duterte took power, there were already 31 cases of killings of labor leaders and organizers all over the country. And a testimony to this, for example, aside from the killings, is the illegal arrest of organizers and leaders of my organization, like one of our organizers who had been assigned to fight against the phase-out of jeepneys, had been singled out by the military, and the trumped-up charges were filed against him, like he was being charged of murder of people in Mindanao, whereas he never been in that place. And when he was arrested by the police in order to keep him detained, they planted a handgun. And this is bailable, but in order to contain, to avoid being able to post bail, they planted a hand grenade as an evidence. So since this is an explosive device, then it's not a bailable offense. So it's still kept on in isolation till the present time.
We're speaking with Elma Lebon, who is the chairperson of the KMU May 1st Labor Center in the Philippines, Kilusang Mayo Uno Labor Federation. I just wanted to also ask you about a little bit about the structure and the nature of your organization in response to, is it a representative organization of all these different sectors of the economy?
It is a representation of the cross-section of the labor movement, like we have members in agriculture, in the semiconductor industry, drug and food line, some textile and garments, also in various services in the Philippines. To name a few of our members, we have them in the Magnolia plant, which is a member of the San Miguel conglomerate. We have the former Philips, which is NXP. We have Wyatt, which has been bought by Nestle, and other multinational corporations like those in the banana plantation under the Sumitomo Fruits Corporation. MIFRO, which I have mentioned, have been victims of the forced surrenders by the military. So we cut across various segments of different industries in the country.
And you are here And I want to make that connection. You were here on a U.S. tour to build support for Philippine workers who are under attack by the Duterte regime by pressuring the U.S. to cut off military aid for the Philippines. Talk about the relationship and what role the U.S. has as it relates to the oppression and repression of the workforce of the Philippines.
The U.S. government funds the Philippine military and police to a staggering amount of about $175 million. And this fund that comes from U.S. people's tax is being used to buy armaments to maim the very people that they're supposed to defend under the Constitution. And so without this big fund being released by the Philippine by the U.S. Government to the Philippine military and police, then they wouldn't have the ability to buy the armaments that they would use against their very own people.
And how large is the military aid? What are we talking about?
Like about $175 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been used to for the anti-terrorism campaign of the military, Philippine military, through the guidance and advice of the U.S. Pentagon. And so they implement the anti-terrorism program, but in the process, even the legitimate people's organization are branded as terrorist organizations like mine. And so there is disrespect, a blanket disrespect of the human rights, trade union, as well as human rights of people in the Philippines. That's why we're calling on the United States workers to lobby the government to stop funding the Duterte government in its war on drugs, but which extends beyond that. In fact, through these funds, they keep on killing people just because they are under the influence or they use drugs, meaning they immediately eliminate people whom they identify as being indulged in the use or sale of drugs. Like, even hardened criminal, to our point of view, should be given their day in court. And so even these drug users should likewise be given their right or the day in court, not just saying that the usual excuse of the police is that they fought back. Every time it's a overused sentence already, that they were intending to arrest the suspect and he fought back. So this is a overused sentence in the Philippines in terms of the campaign against the drug menace.
And another dimension, I assume, is the increased surveillance by the police and the military of trade unions and other political establishment organizations.
Yes, in fact, the attacks against the union organizers has not been just confined to the KMU, but this is also happening to other organizations as well, which has joined the broad alliance to assert the regularization of contractual workers. Indeed, in many cases, we have been able to observe that there are state agents watching our offices, and in one or two cases, our staff would go after them and ask for their identification. They would scamper away, and we know that there are backup vehicles around, and it's really dangerous to accost them just there and then without having a big number of people to do this. It's a dangerous situation, and so we make it a point that we do not just move around alone. We go in tandems, in groups, so to avoid being kidnapped while moving from one place to another. And we see to it that our assemblies and meetings are then most of the time outside of Metro Manila, so that the surveillance would be lesser compared to when we are within the city, where it's easier to make surveillance through the modern equipments and gadgets that would be easily used to eavesdrop whatever plans and programs that we intend to do at any given time. And so we keep this vigilance because we know that the situation is worse than it was under Marcos.
I'd like to ask you about that. If you could talk about how it's worse and what the Duterte regime really means for the peoples of the Philippines, and then give us the message in the time that we have left about what we need to do to work with our sisters and brothers in the Philippines to stop aid to the Duterte military and police.
Yeah, it's worse because there were 3,500 killings, extrajudicial executions during Marcos' over 30-year reign. But in the case of Duterte, in just a period of 2 years, there were already more than 20,000 people killed. So it's a combination of his anti-drug war, and that extends beyond the ranks of activists. And so he confuses things now and lies to people and say that this is still his drug war, but indeed it extends beyond that. So that makes it dangerous. That is why we said that the Duterte regime is Marcos, Arroyo, and Duterte rolled into one. If you read that the names, it would come out that it's the word would be mad. So that's how we describe how dangerous the situation is. And because of this, it is really important that we hear voices from other countries, especially workers that are based in the U.S., to lobby the U.S. Congress and top politicians not to send more aid in the Philippines, as these tax people's tax money are being used to attack the very people that are supposed to be the ones to be defended against attacks. So I think this is one urgent thing to propagate publicly what's happening now in the Philippines. Things are not really good. There's so much oppression and exploitation, especially in Mindanao, where martial law is still being imposed, and there's no end at sight for Duterte to end it, even at the end of this year. So it is a de facto martial law imposition in Metro Manila, because even if it's not formally imposed, we could feel the impact of martial law being imposed there by sowing fear, not just in the ranks of the basic sectors of society like workers, but it cuts across even beyond the middle class, and especially even amongst the religious sector in Philippine society.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there with the admonition to all of our listeners to let your legislators know that we want to support our Filipino workers, our brothers and our sisters, by cutting off military aid to the Duterte administration. And thank you very much, Alma Labong, chairperson of the Kilosong Mayo Uno, the KMU May 1st Labor Center, for the work that you do, for speaking to us with this special. And we're going to try to keep in more frequent touch to see how things are doing and to make sure that we lend our voice to stopping the repression of workers in the Philippines.
Thank you very much too, for giving me this opportunity, and more power to your program.
More power to the people, the workers of the Philippines. Thank you for joining us.
These government workers risk life and limb, making sure commuters can drive safely on this highway. But when they do lose a limb, or life for that matter, they get no compensation.
We get nothing from the government. We only get donations from our co-workers. They'll give us a dollar or two each, and that's it.
They're what's known as job order workers. They're hired for 6 months at a time, and get no additional benefits apart from their daily wages. In the private sector, the equivalent is a so-called contractual employee.
One of the major campaign promises of President Rodrigo Duterte, and one of the factors that most likely got him elected, was an end to temp hiring, or what's known here as ENDO. ENDO is short for end of contract. Now, what it is the practice of companies of hiring employees for only a few months, typically 5 or 6 months. Critics say this is a way for companies to save money by skirting their responsibility to give workers social and health care benefits required under the law for regular employees.
Labor and business groups agree ENDO is illegal, but labor union leaders want more. They say Duterte promised to adopt a policy of direct hiring, but that his executive order prohibiting, quote, illegal contract and subcontract hiring does not do enough.
Just to say that the regulations are very loose.
Because our labor laws are very loose and easy to circumvent, employers will still be able to hire contractual workers. So we need a policy where direct hiring is the norm and third-party hiring is the exception.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.